who is now going to get the proverbial baton as the now most cursed sports city in America? Because the Washington Capitals had not won in 25 years. I'll give you a little bit of drama here as we count them down. In my seventh spot, the city of Charlotte. And again, I could mess this up because I'm doing it in real time, but this is my top seven most feudal sports cities in America right now. City of Charlotte. Now, there are only two pro sports franchises right now in Charlotte. You've got the what's the team in the Bobcats? They've changed the name so many different times. Are they the Hornets again? I can't even remember. Anyway, the NBA franchise has not been very good in the city of Charlotte. And then also you've got the Carolina Panthers, who have been to, I believe, two Super Bowls, lost them both. That is my number seven team. Both of those franchises relatively new. The Charlotte, the Carolina Panthers expansion franchise came in at the same time as the Jacksonville Jaguars. I want to say that was around 92-ish, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around there when those two NFL teams were added. So I've got Charlotte, and then you have the Hornets, Bobcats, whatever their history is as a franchise in the NBA. They came in around the same time. So both of those teams relatively new, but neither has won a championship. The reason why I have Charlotte at number seven is because the Hurricanes, which are, I believe, in Raleigh-Durham, did win the Stanley Cup. So the state of North Carolina has won a championship, and there are, I believe, three pro sports franchises in the state of North Carolina, and one of them has won, even if it's not from Charlotte. So I've got Charlotte as number seven on my list. Number six on my list, I've got the state of Tennessee. Now, this is going to surprise some people, but if you combine all the different biggest teams in the state of Tennessee, you've got Memphis with the Grizzlies in basketball, you've got Nashville with the Titans and the Nashville Predators, and then in East Tennessee, you've got the University of Tennessee, which is a default professional-level caliber sports franchise in terms of the interest level in the state. None of those teams have won a title since 1998 when the University of Tennessee won. And if you want to just sweep all colleges out of the equation, because after all, in North Carolina, Duke and UNC have both won basketball titles, none of the three pro sports franchises in Tennessee have ever won a title. And that's a sneaky long streak of futility, particularly if you're willing to examine the franchise and say, okay, the Memphis Grizzlies used to be in Vancouver, and the Houston Oilers used to be obviously in Houston. Neither of those teams ever won a title either in the Super Bowl era or in the NBA at all. So you've got the Preds, you've got the Grizzlies, and and both Memphis and Vancouver, and the Titans and the Oilers in both Houston and in Nashville that have never won. I have got the city of Nashville and Memphis combined, i.e. the state of Tennessee, pro sports futility, number six on my list. In the five spot, how about San Diego? I think San Diego's a little bit under the radar for a lot of people out there. San Diego, you may not think about, but they lost the Clippers in the 70s, I believe. They just decided to move the Clippers to L.A. and give L.A. two teams. And then they just decided to do the same thing with the Chargers. They lost the Chargers, and they moved them to L.A. So San Diego lost two franchises to the big city up the road, and the only one left now is the Padres. And the Padres have never won anything, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of a championship. I'm not sure when the Padres, if ever, have won a Major League Baseball championship. I've got San Diego as the number five most cursed sports team and sports city. Here's the challenge. San Diego's now basically got one team, so it's hard for them to stay there for a long time. I would say this is a function of both losing the Chargers and losing the Clippers. You lost those franchises, and now you are stuck there. All right, here's my top four. My top four most cursed sports franchises. How about Cincinnati? Cincinnati, you have got the Bengals, who are just awful. year after year after year, except the one year they went to the Super Bowl and they got beaten by the San Francisco 49ers. That was the icky shuffle year. You've got Cincinnati with the Reds, which used to be really good, which is why I've got them at four. The big red machine in the 70s. I grew up a huge Cincinnati Reds fan. They won the World Series in 1990. So that is the last championship that the city of Cincinnati has gotten. Two major pro sports franchises, which is why I've got them down at number four, because they only have the Bengals and because they only have the Reds. So they don't have an NBA team. They don't have a an NHL team. So the two franchises that are there, it has been since 1990 that the city of Cincinnati has won a championship at all. How about in the three spot? Buffalo. Buffalo, I have got at number three on the most cursed American sports cities. We know the history of the Bills. Four straight Super Bowl losses. The long, dark period where the Bills could not even make the playoffs that was finally ended when they got the good fortune of all teams, the Bengals going on the road and making a huge play against the Baltimore Ravens and putting the Buffalo Bills into the playoffs. The Sabres, you know what city loves the NHL more than any other when you look at sports ratings? Buffalo. The Sabres have consistently been disappointments. The Bills, number three overall on my most cursed sports cities in America. Number two on my list. All right, this is where you move in. And again, the Bills only have two pro sports franchises, so that makes it hard for the city to ascend to the very top level of my franchise list because there's only two teams there. Number two on my list. Number two on my list now in the wake of the Washington Capitals having won their championship and ending this quarter century of futility in our nation's capital. Number two on my list, the Atlanta area. Okay, the Atlanta area has not won a title since 1995. The Braves have only won one title despite being in the running to win championships every year. Every year for Braves fans, it's like, oh, this is our year. We're going to make the playoffs. We're going to be in the World Series. We're going to be contending. Our team's record is amazing. They've won one championship all the way back in 1995. They have been cursed in many different years. The Atlanta Falcons certainly let everybody down in the city of Atlanta, giving up that 28-3 lead. The Hawks are like maybe one of the most irrelevant franchises in the history of the NBA, at least going all the way back to when they had Dominique Wilkins and Spud Webb. They just never win. They're never really contending for championships. They're never on the forefront of anybody's mind. They really haven't had a player who has defined the NBA in a quarter century. They didn't even care enough about hockey to get the Thrashers. The Thrashers, I believe, moved to Winnipeg. The city of Atlanta has like 4 million people in it, and Winnipeg, which has 25 people in it, took away their hockey team. Atlanta is number two on my list of sporting city futility. Although, to be fair, this new Atlanta United, one of the things that's getting complicated is how do you factor in the MLS as the MLS rises? Atlanta has completely embraced the MLS. It's been amazing how successful that franchise is. Finally, number one team on my list, the most feudal sports team in all sports town in all of America now, ascending to the top of the list in the wake of Cleveland's championship, in the wake of Washington, D.C.'s championship, it's Minneapolis. Minneapolis, St. Paul, you got the Twins, which won a title, I believe in 92 or 91 when they beat the Braves in seven games. It's the last time that city has won a championship. The T-Wolves consistently, let's be honest, pretty mediocre for a long time. Maybe that's starting to change. We'll see. You have got the Vikings, which basically exists just to rip the heart of Viking fans out and leave it and hold it up to them while it's still beating. And the Wild has not necessarily been that successful in the grand scheme of things either. All right, I'm going to open up the phone lines. I will bring in the crew. That's my top seven. I think I nailed it. It's possible that I got some things wrong as I broke down the top seven. But why would you expect for this show to get everything right? That wouldn't be on par for us. That is my top seven. I am Clay Travis. This is the Friday Morning Outkick. I appreciate you starting off your day with us. I'll bring in the crew next. We'll break it down. Congrats to Washington, D.C. and to the Capitals. And also, frankly, congrats to the Vegas Golden Knights on an improbable and incredible first year, even if it ended in sadness in the Stanley Cup Final. I am Clay Travis. This is the Geico Outkick Studios, and you're listening to Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Car shopping can be confusing with terms like dealer price, list price, and invoice. TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the car you want so you can recognize a good price. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Just starting off the morning with us, Washington Capitals win. I ran through my list of the new top seven most cursed sports cities in America. Minneapolis 1, Atlanta 2, 3 Buffalo, 4 Cincinnati, 5 San Diego, 6 Memphis and Nashville, who have never won a title, if you want to say the state of Tennessee combined, and 7 the city of Charlotte. That is the most cursed sports cities in America. Jason Martin, who did I miss? What do you think of the breakdown?
I don't think it's bad. There are two people on the line from Minnesota that want to argue that you forgot about something. I kind of rolled my eyes when they did based on, well, how you're going to respond to it when we get to their calls in a second. But looking at the list and a list that I had put together earlier this morning as well, San Diego was on my list as well. Chargers never won it, moved to L.A. Padres never won a World Series. Last real run was 20 years ago. It's been around 55 years since anything of real note happened in that area. Charlotte, no titles ever in the city. We discussed that. Cincinnati, I think maybe should be a little higher up. No titles in 25-plus years. Remember, this year, Xavier and Cincinnati were both 1-2 seeds. In this year's NCAA tournament, neither could get out of the first weekend. Cincy lost as the top remaining seed in the South region, which turned out to be a bloodbath. And what was it, Florida State, I think, or Nevada,
they both
knocked
lost
off Xavier. That was a top. They both lost in the third round or the second round. Is how we
second
should
round, I think.
Phrase
yeah.
that. Yeah,
they lost
they get
in
out
Nashville
the first weekend.
In the same place
yes.
too. I mean, so that entire arena
within four
was
hours.
filled with Cincinnati area fans, and maybe that's a good argument to make that they don't have an NBA team. But if you combine
right.
the level of interest in Cincinnati for both Cincinnati and Xavier, that's at least the equivalent of an average NBA franchise, and neither one of those teams has ever won a title in the modern era. And frankly, both of them, Xavier tends to perform really well in the tournament.
Yes.
But Cincinnati, obviously going back to the Kenyon Martin year when he broke his leg and they ended up falling down and not advancing past the second round, I think that year, that's a good point. I mean, yeah. I think the balancing act here is how do you contextualize the college teams, because I think you can analyze them a little bit. But for instance, when you consider Charlotte, well, UNC and Duke in basketball are so insanely successful. And how do you balance out Raleigh? I mean, that means the Raleigh-Durham area is a city of champions, whereas Charlotte is a city of losers, but they're not very far apart. So if you live in North Carolina, I don't know that you think, oh, woe is me, nobody in my state ever wins championships, because the biggest and most important teams in the state of North Carolina, I think, are still Duke and North Carolina when it comes to basketball.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. As someone who lived there, I can tell you without question that is true. Atlanta, Braves 95, you mentioned the Hawks' last title was in 1958. The Falcons never...
are the most irrelevant NBA franchise maybe ever.
Hawks have had four All-Stars since 1980.
The NBA and loves basketball. They are perpetually awful.
Yeah. I mean, they were, I think, a number one seed back in 2015. But they've only had four All-Stars since 1980 come out of the
That's
Hawks. That's how bad they've drafted and how bad they've dealt with free agency. The Thrashers lasted 12 years and went back to Winnipeg. That's another thing you mentioned. Phoenix. No titles in 17 years. Last was the D-backs in 2001. Not quite as futile as some of the others. The Cardinals and Kurt Warner got close. Lost to the Steelers in a pretty good Super Bowl. Suns haven't been good in a while. They never made a finals with Steve Nash. Never made a finals with Amari Stoudemire. Never made a finals when Mike D'Antoni was the head coach there.
Yeah, to me, Phoenix is all those teams are so relatively new, and they've all been pretty good, right? I mean, you have been close. If you are a Phoenix area sports fan, every one of your teams at some point, I mean, you could have easily beaten the Steelers in the Super Bowl. in the Cardinals, you know, that have been there for, what, 25 years or however long they've been there. The Diamondbacks, like we said, have won a championship. That was the year they got to Mariano Rivera, right, if I'm not mistaken, in that series against the Yankees, the kind of the Luis Gonzalez, Luis, I think it was. Like kind of check
the
swing.
Bloop single.
Yeah, bloop single to win. So, and then, yes, you're right about the Suns never getting to a title with Steve Nash during that run. But they were there with Barkley back in the day going up against
95.
Jordan. And arguably, they should have won the title the year that Steve Nash got hip-checked into the scorers table by Robert Horry, I think it was, and Amari Stoudemire came off the bench. They have been relevant a lot of different years. And again, I think the Diamondbacks winning the title, I consider them. But if you've won a title in the 21st century, I don't think you should be in the mix to be considered a cursed sports town.
All right, now the other two, and these two we totally agree on, which is Buffalo and Minneapolis-St. Paul. Buffalo, and I've got some stats for you. Sabres just two Stanley Cup Finals appearances. 99 was the last. Bills lost four Super Bowls in a row. Do we remember Scott Norwood as well?
Yeah.
Buffalo Braves were a good hoop squad in the 70s. They left. Last major title for the city was the Bills AFL in 1965, and this is an interesting stat. They pay more for tickets in Buffalo on average than Atlanta, Phoenix, San Diego, Portland, Charlotte, Salt Lake City, Sacramento, and Ottawa, who are also often mentioned in cities that have dealt with a lot of sports futility. So that's something to pay attention to, is just how big a sports fans they are there. And then in Minneapolis-St. Paul, Twins in 91, the Vikings have failed four times as favorites in the NFC Championship game, twice losing in overtime, which has to be just immensely painful. You discussed the T-Wolves, you had Kevin Garnett, and then you had Kevin Love, and outside of that, you had a bunch of other guys that played there. The fact that I can name Wally Szczerbiak relatively quickly tells you how great a team the T-Wolves have been, that I got to that name relatively quickly.
Jeff Schwartz in with us now. Should winning a WNBA championship count as a championship for purposes of a city's title drought?
That's a good question.
I'm putting them in the same category as the MLS right now, in that I don't think they're considered a major sport. So they're making their efforts, but they're not there.
I agree with that. I mean, they're not a major sport. So if you're talking sports droughts, I mean, which I think we are, I would not include them. Weirdly enough, this is kind of weird. So I don't, like, WNBA ratings are up like 60% this year so far. It's weird.
If I were the WNBA, and I know you've done this, I would go with the legalization of sports gambling, and I would do this for every niche sport. I think NASCAR has become a substantially niche sport. I think the MLS is still a niche sport. I would go all in aggressively with gambling, because I could actually see myself watching WNBA games if they could convince me to gamble on it, because I'd be like, okay, there's nothing else going on in the summer. It's easier to gamble on the WNBA than it is Major League Baseball, because Major League Baseball has got the complicated money line and you have to assess pitchers. And I could look at WNBA and it's basically like betting on the NBA. Don't you think that if you were the, and I know they have the teams, they have a couple of teams at actual casinos. Don't they have the team in Connecticut?
That
plays there, and maybe another one that plays in a casino. I would go all in with gambling.
All right, so you know that I am all in on gambling now. I think I've bet somewhere maybe almost 30, not 30 WNBA games. Close to that. Maybe 25.
You bet on 30 different NBA games, WNBA games.
WNBA games?
How do you do it?
Okay, so I work for ActionNetwork.com. They have they bought a couple of companies that specialize in betting systems, and one of them is called BetLabs.com. So the people that work here come up with these betting systems, and you could just look at them. So, like, they have five WNBA betting systems that are profitable. One of them, now look, they don't hit on all every game, but one of them, the return on investment is 44%. The other one is 27%, and the other ones are 14%, and then 13%. So, like, they're good games to bet on. So I don't even know the team's names. I just get like an alert, like I'm on my computer right now. Like, I got an alert to bet Indiana Fever today and the under, and so I just do it because eventually it's profitable. Like, I've had three money line bets in the WNBA for like over almost plus 200. One was almost plus 300. I lost by 2 points in one of them and in overtime the other one. So, like, they're close to winning and they're very profitable. So I just bet them. I actually know who plays on any of the teams. I couldn't tell you what time the games are. I just follow the system.
Yeah, you know what? I have been making this argument for a while. I think if you really love the idea of gambling, it's fun to gamble on everything, right? Everybody wants to gamble on the Super Bowl. Everybody wants to gamble on the NBA Finals games. The bigger the audience, the more people they bet. And typically, the more efficient the market is. I think where you really have an advantage is if you're out there listening to me right now and you really know something about the WNBA. I think you could make money betting the WNBA because the number of smart, sophisticated gamblers who are putting money down on the WNBA is low. I think also another area where you could dominate is small conference college football. Yes. Because the NFL games are so efficient in the lines, like they hardly move at all. If you're an expert in the MAC or the WAC or the Mountain West, you know, it's hard to do in the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 to have a lot better information than the average guy or girl out there. But if you're a fan of smaller college football, even FCS, you can get a lot of FCS lines. If you really kind of dive into those games and start to pay attention, I think you can get an information advantage in a way that you can't betting big NBA games, betting big NFL games, big college football games. It's not to say it's not fun to bet on big games. I'm just saying the information advantage is in the smaller niche sports. I think you could do the same thing in soccer probably in America today, although that's a little bit complicated, but I think you could do it in tennis. I think you could do it in a lot of different avenues, to be honest.
Well, I think lower level college football, that's exactly right. I know a lot of people that do bet that way. WNBA, I think it's less about like the players. I'm just telling you, I just bet these systems that people that are a lot smarter than me had designed. And for baseball, I'm 50% win rate in baseball, but I'm up 13 units because you bet divisional dogs at home. There's like a system to do this, and you just contrarian bet. And the baseball is a great way to bet if you want to bet against the public, because public throws money on favorites, on home teams, on overs, and I just bet the exact opposite of the public. I have the numbers that like show me where everyone's betting and what everyone's doing. And any team that's getting less than 40% of bets, but the number of money is like 70%, I'm betting on that team because that's who the sharps are betting, not who the public is betting.
Yeah, no, I think that's intriguing in general. By the way, for our poll update, I told you guys I was going to update it. Most cursed American sports city now that D.C. has won a title. Let's see. Let me get the most recent poll results numbers in here. A lot of you out there voting, you can vote in our poll question at Clay Travis. You can also go look at the boobs that were tweeted out on the list here. We've got 10,000 of you or some such that have voted. And right now, Buffalo running away with our poll, most cursed American sports city. Yes. Atlanta in second place, Cincinnati in third place, and Minneapolis in fourth place. Buffalo has never won a title before. So I do think it's possible, even though they've only got two teams. They lost their NBA team to San Diego, which then lost it to L.A., we found out.
Yes.
So they have never won a title in a professional sports league.
I think they're the most cursed, only because they had four straight opportunities to win a Super Bowl and failed. Buffalo is the highest-rated market in America that watches hockey. Like they love their hockey, and the Sabres are awful. And so they want to be really good in hockey, and they're not. They obviously they love their Bills, and they're not very good. I know there's a lot of hype around Josh Allen, which is whatever. It's hype. It's off season. But you know that's the concern. It's like they haven't won, and they've been there. Atlanta has been to one Super Bowl, I believe.
Two,
maybe two. Oh, two. Yes, yes. Two.
Remember
Super Bowls.
The Dirty Birds.
Look, the Braves did win a championship, a World Series in the 90s. I mean, you know, they won 14 division titles in a row, but they won at least one. Minnesota's up there. I mean, to lose last year, knowing that you're hosting a Super Bowl, look, the Eagles were a better team, but they kind of no-showed in the NFC Championship game. So I could see Minnesota being up there as well.
The Vikings, now that they have Kirk Cousins, are really going to feel the pressure because the expectation is with Thielen and with Diggs, and given how talented they are at the tight end position as well, and they'll get who's the running back from Florida? Dalvin Cook back, I think, who was injured, right? I mean, they have a lot of really good talent on the offensive side of the ball. We know how good their defense is now that they've got Kirk Cousins. I mean, they're my pick right now. If I were making a bet in June to win the Super Bowl, I would go with the Minnesota Vikings because I think Kirk Cousins with those weapons is going to be pretty outstanding.
I like the we're talking about value for picks. I think Atlanta, the last I checked, was plus 1,100 to win the NFC. I love Atlanta. They are – look, they did not have a big Super Bowl hangover last year. I mean, they were 5 points away from making the NFC Championship game again. And they're loaded on offense. Their defense keeps getting better. I know they're in a really tough division, but Atlanta, they have a ton of talent. I love Atlanta. You know, obviously, they'd be able to play home in the Super Bowl this year. I can't wait. I'm so glad it's in Atlanta this year. I just have to drive to the Super Bowl. It's so nice. I don't have to travel everywhere.
Yeah, we've got that. I'm sure we'll be down there this year for the Super Bowl as well. I'm curious for you, when you kind of look at this story, we haven't talked about it very much because I'm not one of these guys who gets hyped about Hall of Fames very much. I don't have that much interest in it. What do you think about T.O. not showing up for the Hall of Fame?
I think it's typical T.O. Look, the weekend is a celebration of course, the player making the Hall of Fame, right? It's a personal celebration, but it's also a celebration of the game, of your brothers that also have made the Hall of Fame, right? It's a weekend to celebrate everything together, to see your peers, to also congratulate the other members of the class that are going in. And look, this is a move that, you know, he wants everyone to know that he's upset that he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm not surprised he's done this, but man, I mean, there's been some savage tweets out there. Chris Carter completely savagely basically said, like, I'm glad T.O.'s not coming. He said, Terrell isn't going to be enshrined in Canton. I'm even more excited to attend the Pro Football Hall of Fame weekend now.
Yeah, I mean, T.O. is there are a lot of guys who aren't necessarily big T.O. fans for sure. When you you assume that the Golden State Warriors is over and that they're going to go ahead and win the title,
they
what are you going to spend your time on now that there's no major sports going on?
I got some preview pieces I'm going to write for division winners for Action Network for division winners or whatever overrunners for teams. I got a couple coming out soon. I have a board right here in my office. A couple things I want to write about with football, but I'll just start betting baseball again. I mean, I'm still betting baseball heavy. WNBA. I don't know. Take a break. I have a Pac-12 radio show every day. I mean, I got to find something to talk about. It's this time of year. You know, LeBron sweepstakes is going to be nice because that'll take up a lot. Last summer when we filled in for you, I mean, it was like Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor for 2 weeks. It was awful. I mean, so yeah. Hopefully this year we have LeBron and World Cup. I don't follow soccer, but maybe I'll start following it for the World Cups. We could talk about that a little bit. But it sucks because, hockey ended in Game 5. Basketball's going to end in Game 4. Those could have gone at least another, week and a half? Because hockey was having 2 days off between games, I believe. So is the NBA. So it's, I guess it's baseball, but it's baseball in June. I mean, it's not very exciting.
Outstanding stuff, as always. We'll talk to you next week. Jeff Schwartz, thanks for joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls,
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
This story went everywhere, and we got it sent to us by more people maybe than I have ever seen before. In Texas, a rattlesnake with its head cut off still was not a rattlesnake you wanted to F with. Danny G.
This is a crazy story, and like you said, hundreds of listeners sent it to us. It's widely known that a chicken with a severed head can still run, and like you pull a lizard's tail off, it still moves, right? What about a snake? Jeremy Sutcliffe, 40-year-old Texas native, he found out the hard way a snake's head still can hurt you. He and his wife, Jennifer, were outside doing yard work on the morning of May 27 when Mrs. Sutcliffe discovered a 4-foot-long, dirt-colored rattlesnake in their garden. She screamed loudly. Her husband runs over from his lawnmower. He grabs a shovel, lopped off the creature's head with one swing of the shovel. After about 10 minutes, her husband tried to get rid of the snake's severed head. When he reached down, the snake, which was a Western Diamondback, sank its fangs into his hand and held on for about 30 seconds. Finally, they were able to pull the snake's head off. They called 911. She drove him to the emergency room. He was having seizures, fading in and out of consciousness. After transferring him to an ambulance, they took him by helicopter to a hospital in Corpus Christi. He said to her, "If I die, I love you." He knew it was bad. They got to the hospital. He almost died, Clay. They had to give him 26 doses of anti-venom in his body. The average treatment is between 2 and 4, by the way. They had to put him in a medically induced coma. He is okay now, but that was a near-death incident from a snakehead.
I got it. Well, and I understand, but why would you decide to pick up a snakehead with your bare hand? Even if it was dead, he had a shovel. Why didn't he just pick up the shovel and use the shovel to pick up the snakehead and then just throw the snakehead, I don't know, off his property somewhere or even bury it? I've heard this before. You know, there's a big discussion, I've written about this, about how long your head lived back in the day after you got your head chopped off in a guillotine, like during the French Revolution. They would hold your head up and you could still see even though your head was not attached to your body. They call it living heads because there's enough blood still inside your head because it's happened so instantaneously that you are still conscious inside your brain even though your head has been cut off. So this snake, it doesn't necessarily surprise me that the snake was still angry and the snake tried to take this dude down with him. He was like a suicide bomber snake. I mean, like he got killed, but he almost 26 things of anti-venom. I mean, this guy was almost dead. This is an unbelievable story. So if you happen to kill a rattlesnake, don't pick up the head without being also afraid that you might get bitten. That's a crazy story. What else you got for me, Jason Martin?
All right. California woman, Wednesday, gored by a bison in Yellowstone. Kim Hancock of Santa Rosa in a crowd of people walking along a boardwalk in the lower geyser basin when the attack occurred, according to an official statement from Yellowstone. People in the crowd got increasingly close to the animal. At one point, they were closer than 15 feet from the bison. And you're supposed to keep a distance of roughly 75 feet from certain animals that include bison and elk and stay further from bears and wolves. It crossed the boardwalk, became agitated, charged the crowd, gored this woman, and then left the vicinity. She was wounded in her hip, brought to a Montana hospital in what's said pretty good condition. So she's all right. But how about this? The incident comes on the heels of 2 elk attacks earlier this month. There was one on Sunday and another on Tuesday. Women both times near the Mammoth Hot Springs Hotel in the same area. And they're wondering if it's the same elk that
serial
did this
killer
to two
elk.
Different women.
Yeah.
That's right.
Totally buy it. Totally buy that it could be the same elk.